Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. Returning back on the program with us today is Rick Rule for another Palisade Sprott Monthly Market Update. Rick, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Colin. I enjoy these sessions.
Rick, being that it is our December episode, and since we probably will not speak again until January, I'll begin by asking you how you feel about the metals market reflecting back on 2017 thus far.
I think 2017 was a great year. People had higher expectations for it as a consequence, particularly of the gold equity's extraordinary performance in 2016. But the truth is that the market needed to consolidate the gains that it made in 2016, coming, of course, off a very weak 2015. And I think 2017 accomplished those goals. I think several important things happened in 2017 that perhaps the market hasn't come to understand. The first is that the gold mining companies themselves put in pretty good corporate performance. That is, their cash generation relative to the gold price was much better than expected. Now, that might have had to do more with poor expectations than great performance. But the truth is that the gold mining industry established itself as a real business. The gold price also did better, even in the strength of a relatively strong U.S. dollar, than many people believed it would. We're setting up a circumstance now where gold has substantially outperformed the gold equities, and that, combined with good corporate performance and surprisingly low expectations, to me means that the gold equities will outperform expectation in 2018 and likely generate some share price response to go along with that. Moving from gold to other commodities, 2017 was, of course, a banner year. The oil price moved from, what, $40, $42 to $60. The copper price moved up into survival range. The zinc price moved into profits range. All in all, I would say a very good year from the point of view of the resource business. Finally, Colin, I'm just back in Carlsbad, California, after 5 weeks on the road visiting retail investors and, more importantly, very large institutional investors around the world. And I am delighted to say that there is a lot of money available for the junior sector. Now, this isn't the dumb money that's polluted the sector in the past, but this is smart money that would like to come into the sector, and it's money available to come into the sector really across the balance sheet. So I think we're in a unique place for 2018. Maybe I'm just an incurable optimist, but it feels to me like not too hot, not too cold, just right.
Being that you've witnessed 4 or 5 prior mining cycles, do you find the negative sentiment around these mining stocks odd in light of the fact that if you look at commodities, they did have such a good year? It's not so much an underperformance, it's acting in the opposite direction almost.
I don't see a negative attitude towards mining stocks. The difference perhaps between your outlook and mine, Colin, is I begin with the supposition that at least 80% of the junior mining stocks worldwide have no value. And the fact that the market is negatively inclined towards the zombies, towards the walking wounded, I regard as a symptom of strength. It means that investors are becoming less stupid. And the investors are willing to concentrate their capital bets on a smaller number of high quality entries. You'll notice even in the retail side, the people who have begun to understand retail constituency building, the Amir Adnanis, people like that, have been able to attract bids and have been able to attract capital. What hasn't been working are the lame, the halt, and the blind, the people who really pollute the sector, and the people who are in some way responsible for the precipitous declines that we saw in 2010 and 2011.
Rick, in a recent interview that you did with Tekoa Da Silva, that is, you stated, we might be in the third inning of the junior bull cycle. If you take a relative measure of where the Dow is now versus January of 2016, it's up some 40%. And if you look at the juniors overall, they are up, but not all that much relative to the Dow. So in that regard, do you still think that we're as far along as the third inning of the game?
I do. I think a comparison of the Dow and the juniors is fallacious, because the juniors as a group, if you merge every junior resource company in the world, the juniors as a group are valueless. The Dow, although it sells at more than I think the capitalized value of the Dow's earnings are worth, are not in fact valueless. So the Dow, I think, is selling at a premium to net present value on a cash generating basis. The juniors, if they have a bid at all, are always selling at a premium to value. So I would argue that the better juniors are selling at fair values, and fair values are very cheap from a historic viewpoint in terms of the juniors. Your listeners need to understand the sad truth that if there are 1,000 junior miners listed in Canada, fully 800 of them will return in price over time to their intrinsic value, which is zero. If you buy the sector, you will go broke. You make money buying individual stocks, the best of the best juniors.
It is certainly worth asking you about uranium in light of the fact that following Cameco's production cuts, we've now seen a secondary cut from Kazatomprom, and you've been predicting that low prices would result in supply destruction at some point. Now that that's happening, what kind of a time horizon do you see for investors in terms of seeing some movement in not just the spot price, but of course in the associated equities?
That's the $64 billion question. It's nuanced, so I have to give you a long answer. First of all, I expect in the near term, the first 3 months of next year, that the equities will perform, not just because of the supply cuts, but more because through 2017, I think we used up the sellers. So I think that the stocks will catch a bid, and they'll catch a bid in the absence of offers. And so I think that from a speculative, not from a value standpoint, the uranium juniors will do well in 2018. I suspect that the uranium juniors will issue equity to stay alive. So I expect that the rally will be short-lived as the juniors raise equity based on the strength of their own equity prices. Back to the uranium markets, what happened was excellent news for two reasons. The first is that the cuts took place at all. But the second is that the cuts, both the Kazatomprom cuts and the Cameco cuts, didn't take place for temporary market manipulation reasons. In other words, neither Cameco nor Kazatomprom took supplies off the market in the near term for the purpose of firming or manipulating the market. Both companies took supplies off the market because of the economic realization that they were losing cash on every pound produced, and that is likely in 3 years or 4 years from now, that rather than selling uranium today for $25 a pound, they'll be selling in the future for $60 a pound. So it isn't merely that production cuts took place, it's that rational production cuts took place, that actual supply destruction took place. It's important also, Colin, to note the differences between the two cutbacks. The Kazatomprom cutback is really a deferral of sustaining capital investment, because their ISR production is very much like a water flood. It is fairly easy and fairly cheap for them to restore some of those cutbacks into the market by resuming the sustaining capital investments and powering back up, if you will, the water flood. With regards to Cameco, however, restoring that production would be a much longer and much more capital intensive job. I'm encouraged by the cutbacks in both regards, particularly because, as I say, with regards to the Kazatomprom people, it isn't a market-related cutback, but rather an economic cutback. So unless you saw substantially stronger uranium prices, I don't believe that Kazatomprom would make the sustaining capital investments necessary to restore production. So I'm very encouraged by this. The final thing that we need to talk about, of course, is what we've been talking about all along. That is the surplus supply that overhangs the market. As much as half of that supply belongs to Japanese reactors. So in the near term, The key to the uranium price is the pace of Japanese restarts. If you start those Japanese restarts, a bunch of that surplus inventory doesn't become surplus inventory anymore. It becomes fuel inventory. And I think once we get ourselves above 20 reactors restarted in Japan, that you will see a surprisingly strong reaction in the uranium price. But until then, I think that you'll see a price response being muted. And unfortunately, in direct answer to your question, I don't know enough about Japanese politics to understand when we will get to the 20 reactor restart level.
Rick, thanks so much, as always, for coming on the program. Was hoping to ask you some more questions, but we've got a bit of a time crunch here. So best of wishes for the holidays, and looking forward to getting you back on the show in January.
Colin, best of the season to you and yours and to all your listeners. It's been a pleasure talking to you this year. Think you understand the junior mining sector, and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?